So we're now beginning to enter into our week together, beginning to gather ourselves up and hopefully wholeheartedly throw ourselves into the practice for the week. And what I'd like, how I'd like to start off would be to introduce you to pure awareness meditation practice. I know some of you already have this in place. I suspect, well, there'll be others that I don't know. I would imagine that they also have this in place, but there'll certainly be others that have other practices that they're cultivating. Well, just to enter the spirit of the week, it would be good. It would be good if we can unify our meditation. We're trying to unify everything else. It'd be a bit odd if we all just went off on different tangents with different meditation practices. So, without hopefully creating any difficulties with what you're doing at the moment, give it a try. Give it a go. It is the simplest form of practice you could ever possibly imagine, and hopefully, if you pick the spirit of its essence, if you can pick that spirit, you'll find that you'll be able to take it to all of your different meditation practices. That's the title of the theme of this retreat, isn't it? The universal practice of pure awareness, and hopefully, as the days go by, we will come to see that actually this practice penetrates all other Dharma practices with consummate ease. But let's try to put it into practice specifically on its own. And because of its simplicity, it can actually be taught in a few seconds. You don't need to come back to it over and over again and listen to people trying to unpick it for you and guide you. It is so very simple. It's so simple that actually I'll make it a little bit more complicated so that you don't feel hard done by and that you've actually got something quite difficult to be working with. Otherwise you might want your money back. So, just talking about, or starting off specifically with sitting meditation, is of course we sit in our, we go to our posture, whatever it may be, and hopefully that's something that you give attention to and have given attention to and you regard as being extremely important for your practice, and not regard it as something incidental that sort of tacks on to this profound meditation technique that you're developing. Your physical posture will have a very big effect on your mental states, your mental being. To have a straight and balanced posture will help you develop a straight and balanced meditation, because mind and body are not two. If your body is somehow stressed and bent, not only will it damage you physically sooner or later, but also it will certainly affect your meditation. So never imagine your posture to be something secondary. It is not. It is extremely important. So assuming that you've all given that your attention and your posture is pretty straight and pretty true, let's take that as being in place. Then the most direct way of entering this practice is to simply sit, cross your legs, take a couple of deep breaths, and your awareness, which is present, which is always present, whether it's bright or dull, your awareness is present, is to return to your awareness intentionally and stay there. But for most of us, until our practice matures, we will find that difficult most of the time. Certainly during a retreat, after a few days, when we're really gathered up, it is possible to simply sit and just simply fall into awareness. But if that's possible, then that's it. If it's not possible, and it isn't for most of us, being realistic, it's a good idea as a skillful means to employ another form of practice as an expedient means, as a means to an end, not as an end in itself. And the most obvious one, the best one, it's one that we've all tried it. Most of us get on with it. It's mindfulness of breathing or anapanasati. And it's to pick a stage, one that suits you, one that seems to work well for you, and to start your meditation with that particular stage. What's so conducive about mindfulness of breathing is that it is a non-conceptual practice. It doesn't have a theme, but it's just an observation of our natural breathing in whichever form whichever perspective we choose to employ. I would suggest, if you have a choice, pick a stage that actually brings you into your body, or actually comes from your body. And the best one is the rise and fall of your abdomen, which is actually regarded as one of the simplest, one of the crudest, if that's the right word, forms of concentration development, because it's the rise and fall of the stomach. It's quite crude in that sense, but the great value, as we will come to see over the days, that this practice is very much about being in the body, that if that brings you into your body at the beginning and develops that habit of coming to the body and staying in the body, this works very, very well with the pure awareness practice. So if that suits you, let me suggest that. If it doesn't, then one of the other forms, whether it's counting your breath or putting your attention up here somewhere or whatever. There seems to be an ever-growing amount of options in terms of developing anapanasati. But only pick one, only stay with one, and always keep it in mind that this is a means to an end. This isn't an end in itself. It's a technique that we use in the beginning to gather ourselves up, just to help to settle the scattered mind, to bring it back to a one-pointed experience, a concentrated experience, this one-pointedness. And now this may take, it depends on the individual, it depends on the circumstances, because these things ebb and flow irrespective of how experienced we are. We may find that we need, in order to gather ourselves up, maybe 5 seconds, maybe 5 minutes, maybe the whole meditation period, we're all over the place. Maybe the whole day. Who knows? But it's a means to an end, and it's not something that we stay with and stay with because that's what we're doing. We're there until we feel gathered up. And when we feel gathered up, when we feel comfortably one-pointed, of course, all of this is in conjunction with awareness. Awareness, of course, without awareness, we couldn't be doing it. And awareness is there the whole time, that allows this one-pointedness to happen, to take place. And when that one-pointedness we feel is fairly established, it certainly doesn't have to be perfect, otherwise you'd never leave it. It's not about being perfect, but it's about feeling comfortable that you're gathered up. And when you're gathered up with that one-pointedness, let it go. Let it go. And come back and abide in the awareness that is a part of the one-pointedness, but actually we discover that actually the awareness is even beyond the one-pointedness. that there is, as it were, something that is beyond the one-pointedness, and that's our awareness. Our awareness, as we will come to discover, is ever-present. Sometimes we lose it, but it's not that awareness actually ceases to exist, it's just that we have lost the ability to be awakened, to be awake to it. So come to that awareness. And awareness has the characteristic of not being one-pointed. It isn't something that is fixed on a point. But actually, our awareness is something that embraces all experience. We have experiences of through our senses, which takes us to one object, maybe the bird on the tree, maybe the wind, maybe somebody coughing. Awareness takes us to those objects, and there's a sort of a fixation on that object. But the nature of awareness actually isn't to be one-pointed. Our awareness, the nature of awareness, is to be all-inclusive, is to be open, to be objectless. And in that objectlessness, it embraces all objects, but actually never loses itself in any of the objects. And we aspire to this openness, to this awareness, this all-embracing awareness. No longer fixing ourselves on any particular point, but learning to aspire to the expansiveness that we discover, that we come away from that point and then we become more aware of our body and our feelings and our emotions, the sensations of sitting on a cushion, our mental states, positive, negative, whatever they are. But you know, awareness has no opinion. It doesn't say good and bad, right and wrong. It just knows. And by not falling into the trap of opinions and judgments and losing that expansiveness and coming down to a point that then begins to investigate particular things, learning to stay away from that trap, but to stay in that all-expansive awareness, we discover that awareness does indeed become more and more expansive, that it becomes aware of the body, the mind, and as I say, all the experiences that are actually taking place in this very moment. And from there, and from that starting point, we can then begin to discover that awareness actually goes beyond our body, comes into the room, comes into the environment. We can be aware of other people, we can be aware of the sounds, the energy, the heat, just the awareness of having so many people in one room. And that awareness can become even more expansive, can then begin to go outside and to maybe hear the birds, certainly hear the wind, and a lot of the time hear the rain. So suddenly we become aware of so much that's going on. When we're in a pointed, one concentrated state, actually we're not aware of anything other than that one point. Now we've let that go. We begin to aspire, we begin to open the door to the great mystery of awareness. This thing, that this experience, this part of me, which is we always regard as me and mine, this awareness is me, this awareness is mine, becomes more expansive, less personal in that sense, because it's no longer caught up with views and opinions that create the personal, but actually begins to embrace the environment. And this really does begin to open the door to this great mystery that we've always assumed that awareness is a part, as one of my possessions. Maybe for the first time in our life, we actually begin to question that, begin to doubt that. Is this really me? Is this really mine? Or is there something far grander, far greater, actually taking place? This begins to open the door to maybe for the first time to take us away from me and mine, take us away from this person, this individual, that me and my practice and my the way I set the practice up and the way I manipulate and control and make, I want to do this and I want to do that and I want to achieve this and I want to achieve that. This fellow that always seems to want to be in control, even of our practice, never mind the rest of our lives, but even this Dharma practice that we've been pursuing for a while becomes something that we begin to manipulate and begin to guide and control. We begin to aspire to even beyond that, that we can begin to get a taste, maybe for the first time, there is actually something that is actually beyond me, actually beyond my practice, if you like, something that is beyond my control, something that isn't mine, isn't something that I can manipulate. This awakening begins to take place when we can learn to just come back and abide and stay with our awareness. Like the mirror that reflects everything perfectly, but it doesn't have an opinion. It just reflects. And in regard to awareness, that too takes place with awareness. But awareness has something more than a mirror. Awareness actually knows. It knows. It doesn't have to be taught. We don't have to educate it. It is actually all-knowing, ultimately. And here we begin to get on the threshold of that great mystery that is beyond me. And we can begin to taste that threshold, begin to taste that journey by learning to put this type of practice in place, a practice that doesn't have a path, that doesn't have concepts, doesn't have a theme, doesn't give any sense where I'm going to do this and then I'm going to become that and then I'm going to get that also. Something that you progress and you develop. This isn't like that at all. This is about learning to trust and learning to let go of all of that which wants to control, that which wants to guide, that which wants to learn. I mean, who is this person that wants to do this? Where is this coming from? The spirit, we begin to get the taste of the spirit of this type of practice by learning to put the meditation in place. It is, as I said at the beginning, it is simplicity itself. But it is deeply profound. And by learning to put this new experience, we begin to awaken maybe to something that, incredibly, awareness is always the, Dharma is all about awareness. Liberation and awakening is all about awareness. All Buddhism, all spiritual paths, all insightful paths are all about awareness. And yet it's remarkable how we can somehow put awareness itself on the back burner, on the top shelf somewhere, whilst we develop these techniques and all these little things that we get lost in. And yet the very thing that we are aspiring to, i.e. awareness, very often doesn't become a part of the picture, or a very small part of the picture, certainly not the main part of the picture. But here we dispense with all the bits and pieces, all the stuff that we develop, and actually go right to the heart of where all Dharma will take us, which is into our unsullied, unborn awareness. We aspire to that awareness, to that pure awareness, before it gets caught by the world. We aspire to that right from the very beginning. And that's our aspiration, right from the very beginning. And there is no other aspiration other than to abide in the pure, impure awareness, in the what is often call the unborn, before the world is born, before my opinions and views and my likes and dislikes, and that fellow that wants to control, before all of that comes into being, learn to aspire into that pure awareness. And we can begin to learn to open up to that by making it our sitting meditation, by learning to nurture, by learning to become familiar with that natural state that we are beginning to aspire to. We can begin to awaken, begin to learn and begin to become familiar with that aspiration on our cushion. And that's the great value of sitting meditation, is that it does allow us that familiarity to learn to let go of the conditioning that we must be doing something, that we must be developing something, which is not, I'm not dismissing conventional practices, the conventional path, which is a very wonderful and a very true path that most Buddhism actually puts into place. This is not a criticism of that in any way whatsoever, and it's not a criticism of any practices that you may be doing, contrary to what some people may think. It is not that. What it is an offering. And that's all it is. That's all you'll get from me, is an offering. That actually you can, as it were, step over all of those developmental methods, most of which have been developed by the Buddha. And I'm the last person to criticize the Buddha. But it is possible to step over all of those developmental methods and learn to, through familiarity, actually come to the end of the path, which is awareness. That's it. Awareness is the end of the path. And what sitting meditation will do, it will allow us to grow into that form of practice. Let go of the conditioning that somehow we've always got to be doing something, developing something, and getting something for what we're doing. That is a powerful conditioning. It's in our life anyway, and it's certainly, we've taken that conditioning into our Dharmic life, into our Buddhist life. But also within Buddhism, it is possible that there is a path where you can learn to step over all of that and just abide within awareness, which is, as I say, is always the end of the path anyway. One of the most important words in Buddhism is familiarity, because we're always going into the unknown. Things are always opening up. We're always going into that not knowing. And the way and not knowing what we're going into very often can very often be fearful, because we don't know the unknown. We can be frightened. And Dharma practice can be frightening because it is a process of the self, of the ego dying, and that can very often impact upon us, that we do feel as though we're dying. But it's learning to trust that death, and learning to open up to that, which allows the path, if you like, to develop. And that awareness that we put in place right at the very beginning is learning to become familiar with that experience, learning to become familiar with how it works. This is what's so valuable about sitting meditation, is that it does bring us to that point where we can become more and more familiar. And the more familiar that we can become with the experience, the more we understand, we know how it works, and the more that we can learn to trust. And when we trust, we can begin to let go. And that's the great value of the sitting meditation. It is simplicity itself. It is nothing but coming to our awareness and learning to stay with our awareness. And if we lose it, if the chattering mind comes in and thoughts come and, you know, gets caught up with our emotions and we get carried away, if you find that this happens, come back to your concentration exercise, whether it be for a few seconds or a few minutes, to gather yourself up again. And when you feel gathered up, let it go and go back to the spaciousness that you were experiencing before. Use it as a skillful means, as a way of helping you come back to that spaciousness and to that openness, and learn to abide in that openness. And that really, fundamentally, is it. I went once to a Soto monastery with a bunch of people that never even meditated before. And the monk sat down and gave them the meditation instruction. And it took him about 15 seconds. And then the next day, to me this was very wonderful when I heard this. The next day, when he was talking to us all again, he said, "Yesterday, you know, I taught you the basic meditation, the simplicity of the meditation and how simple it is. And I expect you're now expecting something more complicated, something extra." He says, "No, I'm sorry, that's it. That's it. That will do you for the rest of your life." I thought that was so wonderful, because we can get so caught up and so burdened by technique after technique after technique, whether it's samatha, vipassana, and here we have a practice that takes but seconds to learn and a lifetime to perfect. That's the meditation that I would like to ask you to, if you're not already engaged with this, to give it a try. You've come to learn that it won't interfere, it won't undermine in any way any practice that you're doing. We'll come to that as we go. It can't, it's impossible if you do it correctly. It's impossible, it cannot in any way undermine what you're doing. But this is the meditation, and to me this is a good way. I've discovered a good way of starting these retreats off by introducing that way into the practice. Because actually, the sitting meditation, unlike in many other forms of practice, is really no more important than the rest of your life, than your other posture. You know, we have standing, sitting, walking, lying down in Buddhism. Your sitting meditation, which often can be, for many, be the be-all and the end-all. This is what Dharma practice is about. It's about sitting like the Buddha up there, and sitting and sitting and sitting. And then one day you're going to be enlightened because you've been sitting, sitting and sitting. This practice is most certainly is not about sitting, sitting, sitting. It certainly incorporates sitting, and a lot of sitting, if that's how it works. But the spirit and the understanding and the fulfillment of this practice can only be possible, and please don't forget this, it can only be possible when you take that spirit of openness and inclusivity to the rest of your life, to the whole of your life, from the moment you wake up in the morning till the moment you fall asleep. And when you become mature enough with your practice, you will be able to even take it into your sleep. But it's the development of equanimity towards the whole of life in all the postures. So there is a continuum. This practice is a continuum that doesn't stop and start when you're on and off the cushion. Doesn't have highs and lows depending on what you're doing and where you are. There is no situation that is more Well, there are situations that are more skillful than other situations, but there is no situation where you cannot bring practice to, so that we don't pick and choose our activities, our life, our experiences, and decide to bring the practice to specific experiences and put it to one side with other what we would consider to be unwholesome experiences. This is not the spirit of what we do. The spirit of this practice is not to pick and choose right, wrong, good, bad, wholesome, unwholesome. This has no part in the essence and the spirit of this practice. This is about opening and embracing all of your experiences, all of your life, all of your emotions, all of your fears, all of your desires, in a spirit of complete and utter, uncompromising inclusivity. And this is so, so important to grow into that feature of this practice. And in many ways that makes it unique, because other practices do manipulate to some extent. This one does not manipulate. It is not interested in good and bad, right and wrong, wholesome and unwholesome. It's not interested, because your awareness that we aspire to actually is beyond good and bad, right and wrong, wholesome and unwholesome. It is blissfully untouched by the world and our interpretation of the world, and the dualistic interpretation that we are forever being caught by. Our awareness is not touched by any of that. We may not realize that. We may think awareness belongs to me. And if awareness belonged to me, then awareness certainly would be part of good and bad, right and wrong, etc. That duality that we are locked into. But actually, we begin to awaken slowly through familiarity, begin to realize that actually that awareness is not touched by any of these one-sided views. And the more that we can begin to awaken to the reality of our awareness, the more expansive, the more inclusive we will become in our life, the less inclined we will be to try and manipulate and pigeonhole and cut our experiences up to suit me and to suit my desires and my aversions. This has a major effect on all of that. That which is what makes me as an individual makes David. David is a bundle of conditions, is a bundle of opinions and views, abiding continually in duality, bouncing from one side to the other, manipulating and controlling, spending my whole life trying to control life, trying to manipulate it. And of course, we never really succeed, do we? Well, at least David hasn't. I don't know if anybody else has. I haven't. But there's something in me that never seems to give up. And this is the cause of our difficulties of life, and the cause of our sense of unsatisfactoriness of life, and actually brings us all here into situations like this. But beyond that, we are living out of that which is beyond all of that dualism. And it's learning to grow into this type of practice that we begin to awaken to that and begin to get a taste of what we can call our true nature. This is often how it's described. Our awareness is actually a part of, in fact is, our true nature, our Buddha nature. And that Buddha nature, that true nature, is beyond all of these designations, is beyond this duality, is actually beyond birth and death, and beyond the eternal becoming that we've all read about, at least, where we just are all trapped on this eternal cycle of coming to be and ceasing to be, and all the dukkha that goes with it. Well, mysteriously, how this may sound, but the awareness that we live out of, the awareness that we are convinced is me, me and mine, that awareness actually never dies. Even when we finally come to the end of our life and our body, following the laws of nature, breaks up, that which is beyond David actually never dies. And that's quite something to realize, actually. To realize that we're living out of something that actually never dies, because it was never born. It is eternal, it is free. It is our true nature, and it is what we really are. And yet we've lost it. And yet we live out of it, moment by moment. And it's our journey back into that, if you wish. Journey back into our eternal nature is what brings us all here today. Whether we're aware of that or not, it doesn't matter. There is something inside of us, conscious or subconscious, that is aspiring back into that eternal free nature. And we can begin to taste, begin to open up, begin to awaken to that reality of what we really are by just learning to be still. No methods, no techniques, but actually learn to come back into the stillness that is our true nature. Now that stillness, and this is something to really contemplate. You know, when we meditate, sometimes we talk about I'm getting myself into concentration, or I'm making concentration, or we often think that we're actually making the stillness, making that coolness that we all so much desire, that it's something that we make, that if we do this and this, you know, it's like making a cake. You've got flour and water and an egg and whatever, pinch of salt or whatever it is that makes cakes, and you put them all together skillfully and correctly, you end up with this thing called cake. We seem to think this stillness and this concentration is a bit like making a cake, is that we have all of these ingredients and we mix them up and we taste this spaciousness, this stillness, you know, that we created this stillness, created this spaciousness. That's absolute nonsense. How can you create spaciousness? What is space made of? What we learn to do is aspire, is to return to what is our true state of being, and our true state of being is one of spaciousness, is one of stillness, is one of peace. That's our true nature. It's there. It's already there. It's permanent. It doesn't rise and fall. It doesn't come and go. It is there. It is not impermanent, like we like to think everything is impermanent. That which is beyond impermanence is permanent, and that permanence is our true nature. And the characteristic, if you can say it can have a characteristic, is one of unimaginable spaciousness and stillness. It's there. And what we do in our practice is that we learn to, as it were, we don't mix things up. We learn to blow the clouds away. And when the clouds are blown away, the sun will be revealed. The sun that we could imagine, oh look, I've just created the sun. But of course we all know that the sun has been there all the time, shining bright. There permanently, shining. But what we've done, we've allowed clouds to roll across. And mask it over. Well, this is what we do with our awareness, our true nature, is that we allow the clouds to roll across and mask it. How we return to that brightness, to that stillness. In essence, what we're doing is that we're not doing anything. We're just learning to be still, learning to leave things alone, so that those things that have masked the sun, our emotions, our views, our opinions, our fears, our desires, we leave them alone and we allow them to burn themselves out. We learn through awareness to just leave them be, not to be carried away by them, not to be caught up with them in the same old habitual way, and just create even more confusion and doubt and non-understanding. But learn to leave them alone through awareness, and it's only through awareness that this become possible, that we learn to leave these obstructions alone and let them play themselves, let them burn themselves out, the energy that gives them life and volition. Learn to leave them alone so that they expire themselves. And this is the great characteristic of this type of practice. Again, we have to grow into it, because logically and according to our conditioning, it is something almost crazy, impossible, stupid, that actually, in order to return to our true nature, to return to freedom, to go beyond birth and death, is that we learn to do nothing. Leave it alone. And that's something we have to grow into, because that doesn't make sense. We are so heavily conditioned, we cannot imagine awakening, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it. It cannot be possible unless I learn to do lots of things and do all the right things and go from one thing to another. To learn to let all of that go, to learn to let go all of that goal-orientated activity. I'm going to do this because I want to get that. That massive conditioning that we've all got, that we learnt from when we're babies, that we then bring into our Dharma practice, so that our Dharma practice just becomes another worldly activity. The worldly activity that's entrapped us anyway. Our Dharma practice can actually become just another entrapment of something to do, something to get, something to be. And to pursue the Dharma in that same vein, and then wonder why after years and years of practice we can become so disheartened, and so we've not become what we set out to be, and all sorts of negativity that can come out of that realization. To learn to grow in, to learn to let go of that conditioning, learn to grow into leaving things alone takes time, takes commitment, takes faith and trust. But it's the path of what we call pure awareness path, where it is the path of non-doing. And to grow into that essence is something that for most of us takes a long time. This sort of introductory few minutes begins to open up vistas of the subject, of how we can proceed over the next few days, and hopefully it's evoked a few thoughts and questions from yourselves. But we only have a few minutes left before we sit again, so rather than go off into all sorts of tangents at the moment, does anybody, just on a practical level if you like, I mean, is everybody comfortable with the meditation itself, with, you know, of actually beginning it, putting it into effect? Has anybody got any queries on that at all? So that we, if we can settle that bit today, and then we can learn to turn our attention to what I've been talking about, we'll all be, you know, we'll all be moving in that direction, and then hopefully we can deepen our understanding as the days go by. But let's just get this first bit in place first, and then we'll worry about the rest at some other time. Well, I mean, at the end of the, you know, all of this is an offering. It isn't, you know, people ultimately, I've discovered anyway over these years that at the end of the day, people always do what they want to do anyway. Irrespective of what I say or other people. But I would, what I would like, what would be really good to, for these few days, as it is a pure awareness retreat, I mean, it is, you know, advertised as that, and it will be, you know, this is obviously very clearly the theme. If only for a few days, to try and put this, to get some experience and understanding, because when you actually do it, rather than just thinking about it and say, yeah, well, that's great, that's wonderful, but when you actually come to put it into a living effect, as it were, things become a lot clearer, because it's your direct experience. But what hopefully it will show over these days is that the aspiration of openness and inclusivity, you will be able to take quite easily into your sadhana. It will not interfere with it at all. But if you've got that other perspective, you will find that they become one. And it will, because awareness is what it's all about anyway. So you're never going to, whatever practice you've got, you should never be, you know, far away from awareness, because this is what it is. All practices are about awareness. Change comes through awareness. So, but all what I'm asking people, if they could just suspend whatever they're doing and just develop some understanding exclusively around this, and then they will find that they could just simply slot, bring the two together, which will help, I'm certain it will help support and deepen this particular practice, the particular practice you're doing, or any other ones that people are doing, as long as they're not practices that people have made up, your own invention, that's probably not a good idea. Take on practices that have been developed by the Buddha. There's a lot more, you'll be on safer ground, I think. That's all I'm asking. You know, you can, as I say, people do what they want to do at the end. I just think that by doing this in a practical way, you begin to see what it's about, if you like, that it, that this, the awareness does become all-embracing and is ultimately, is the end of the path. It is about awareness being ever-present, is what all practices are meant to be leading us to. By getting a taste of that, and by learning to, you can then learn to bring that into, in your case, into your sadhana. But I think unless you actually give it some attention, as it were, I think, you know, it's going to be difficult to get the essence, because it will get mixed up with other things, I would say. Better to work with it on its own, just for a few days, that's all. Have fun, enjoy it. experiment, play with it. It's fun. It's not serious. You know, we're meant to be learning to be playful when we're practicing. We're all returning to our childhood by practicing the Dharma. We're all learning to become little babies again, innocent babies that don't know anything, that just play in the moment. That's where we go. We're all aspiring to become little babies again. So by bringing that spirit of playfulness into what we do, it really, really does lighten the burden of me, of I must, you know, this is serious. I've got all these troubles and all these problems that I've got to, you know, especially as Western people, we've all got, you know, sacks of coal on our back, haven't we? We've really, really got to learn to chill out when we're doing this practice. Because if we don't, those burdens will never drop off. They will just get heavier. And so by learning to bring in a spirit of playfulness, of fun almost, not I don't mean that in a trivial way, but learn to develop a playful, positive relationship with our stuff, which is what we're doing. It's our stuff that has to transform, and we have to have the right positive attitude. And that playfulness helps to nurture that lightness that actually we really ought not to take ourselves so seriously, as nearly all of us, especially us Westerners, nearly all of us do. And we've really got to go beyond that if this is really going to work in the long run. So if you could take this week, you know, in that spirit, that it's something very skillful that you can learn to bring, you know, into whatever you feel that you're committed to at the moment, learn to bring that lightness, that sense of playfulness, has got to help any form of Dharma practice. Because at the end of the day, I don't care what anybody's doing. What this is all about is developing a positive relationship with ourselves, learning to like ourselves, learning to love ourselves. That's what it's all about. And if we can start by developing this sense of lightness, playfulness, it is a very, very skillful way. So, you know, see this week as an opportunity to learn a new game, if you like, and then bring it to these other things that, you know, you feel are more important for you at this particular moment. But like I say, people will do what they want to do at the end of the day, and I can't do anything about it. I've given up trying to make people do what I want them to do. Mm-hmm. I discovered that is the quickest way to dukkha and disappointment. So I have to be quite philosophical about these things. I just, you know, just ask people to enter the spirit of what is on offer. It is very, very simple. And if you think, well, wow, this is really simple, I must be missing something, well, you're not actually. Mm-hmm. You think, well, there's got to be more to this because I understand what he's talking about, and that can't be right. But actually, it is that simple. But you will find out of that simplicity, so much will come out of that. Don't misunderstand it as being some sort of passive, benign form of practice. Because believe me, I can tell you there is nothing more dynamic, and that may not be apparent, and it may seem very paradoxical, but what appears to be on one level quite passive, accepting and passive, is actually quite remarkably dynamic. It will engage the whole of yourself, the whole of your being, and everything inside of you will be touched by that stillness. So don't underestimate, and don't think because it's simple you've been shortchanged. You haven't. This is very, very profound. So with that, that will do for today, and we have another period of meditation before lunch. So thank you all.